Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis. Go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
You know, at Magalu, we don't call them subcontractors. We call them trade contractors, trade partners, and really they're craftsmen. And we've kind of gone away from that craftsman mentality where we bring in people because we need bodies, but they don't know how to do the work. And so somehow we must, as an industry, refocus on the craftsman.
Welcome to the podcast. Very excited to have Brad Simmons on with us today. Welcome, Brad.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Good to meet you. You've got a great first name, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say the same thing. You have a great, it makes the intro easy when it's the same name. So
that's right.
Well, Brad is with Magalu Corporate, and there's a lot of roles. I know we were talking about this in preparation for this and before you came on, and very fortunate to have Brad on. He has a wealth of experience and knowledge, and I know it's going to be really, really beneficial. And so maybe before I start with, you know, labor and a lot of things a lot of us are dealing with, maybe walk through a little bit. You mentioned that you're involved with NHB. You know, you've been involved with Magalu. You've had other construction companies of your own and consulted others. And we have another venture we're going to speak about that you're working on. Why so passionate about the home building industry?
You know, my dad's actually sitting outside in my lobby, and he's my mentor. He's 80 in his 83rd year, and he was a home builder. And so back in the day when parents didn't get arrested for having teenagers work on job sites, all I did was work on job sites from the time I was 12 years old. So it's been in my blood. And my brother's a builder, and just learned to really love the industry, love the people in the industry. It is a very honest, hardworking industry. My involvement in NHB for 26 years has allowed me to have friends all over the country who work in the industry, both on the supplier side and the building side. And you just don't find a better group of people. And so it's engaging and it's fun. Recently walking some jobs up in our Sun Valley operation and just being out there with the trades and talking to guys and looking at things and making sure that they're done right is just, it's awesome. There's just nothing better than putting something from ground up and seeing it come to fruition. So I love it. Love the industry.
I want to come back to the NHB angle that you mentioned, but Brad, maybe I'll go here. When you speak about that you've been involved since a young kid, your dad's here in the office right now. How has the home building industry changed? I know Magalu's, you know, you focus on some all huge diversity of projects, some high-end stuff, you self-perform stuff. When you look at kind of your career and how you've seen home building change, what's one of the biggest things that you've seen, you know, today as opposed to many years ago?
I think the complexity of it, I mean, let's face it, over the last 30 years, codes have gotten more complex. I'm not sure those complexities fix anything. I think a lot of times code reaction is a reaction to a very small problem, but they take it global. The cost of building is horrendously more expensive than it was in the past. And I think we're seeing, I hate to blame it on the pandemic since we blame everything on the pandemic, but there is a change in customer attitudes, and I'm seeing it in our company. I'm seeing it with the companies I consult with, and I'm hearing about it from everybody at NHB. It's just like customers have all of a sudden gotten really hard, and where customers used to pay you, you know, in the custom world where you have people paying cash, they'd pay you without questioning. Now they're just like questioning everything, withholding money over the littlest things. And it's just not the partnership that it was even a few years ago. And so as things get harder, it makes it even more expensive because we have to hire more people to handle the hard, and we can't find people to hire. And so it's a crazy time right now in our industry. I am lucky. Utah's economy is still very, very strong. Building business is good. Had a great January in our state. But there's those challenges, those underlying challenges are just making it harder for everybody.
So as you look at that customer experience, and I think this has been pretty uniform to most people I speak with, I think a lot of my employees would agree, just in networking groups, and so a lot of builders, I think there's a lot of challenges. I know supply chain has gotten better. You know, we dealt with some really big challenges there for a few years. One big thing is labor. I know, I'm not sure how Utah is. I know Phoenix specifically, trades are still overworked. Qualification and manpower is not as great. So we've seen kind of that come down over the years. You know, homeowner expectations, maybe our lack of setting them properly. I mean, there's a whole multitude here. How have you seen these other ancillary items such as labor, such as supply chain affect, you know, that relationship with the client?
Well, you know, it's interesting because like most things in life, Murphy's Law kicks in. You know, we have a pandemic, we have supply chain problems, and you know, the demand goes through the roof at the same time. If we had had a reduction in work like everybody thought we'd have at the beginning of the pandemic, the supply chain issues would not have been as big a problem. But that we're still hanging on to that. And the thing is, customers don't understand. And sometimes in our industry, as much as I love it, we're not really good at the customer experience. You know, so many times, I can't tell you how many times I tell builders, get signatures. Don't do anything without a signature. And yet we struggle, even at McElby, we still struggle with that. It's like, you know, I mean, I just went and bought a new phone yesterday. I had to sign a million papers to get a stupid little phone. And we're afraid to ask our customers to sign documents, change orders. We think it's an imposition to them, when in reality, we're just trying to keep the lines of communication open. And so I think we struggle in that area a little bit. Some of us are not very tech savvy. We're not the best accountants. And so we struggle with some of those very basic things that make it a little smoother. So we kind of cause some of our own problems. In regards to the labor, our internal trade group a year ago had 75 guys and gals working for it. We're at 50 right now. And which drives down our revenue and our profitability, because the more people we have, you know, we make money on people and what they do. We advertise everywhere. Utah is a very strong economy. We cannot find people that want to come to work. We probably hire five and keep zero. I mean, most of them don't last a week. And so that is hard. And then you mentioned it, Brad, the quality, I've always thought of, you know, at McElby, we don't call them subcontractors. We call them trade contractors, trade partners. And really, they're craftsmen. And we've kind of gone away from that craftsman mentality, where we bring in people because we need bodies, but they don't know how to do the work. And so simple little things, you know, cutting a stud to the right length so that you don't have a little gap, even on an interior wall, it just makes a difference. And we just don't see that. And I don't, in some of the production world, maybe the, you know, they're so busy or have been so busy over the last few years that maybe they've laxed off on quality. It was just get it done. But we're seeing a huge amount of quality issues that are frustrating for customers, frustrating for us. And so somehow we must, as an industry, refocus on the craftsmen, treating them the way they need to be treated. I was sitting next to a Toyota recruiter for Toyota Motors a few years ago, actually at a Skills USA event in Las Vegas. And after about 3 days, we became friends. She's a former Marine, retired Marine. And I was, you know, my dad's a Marine. So like we connected on that level. And at the end of the day, she looked at me and just smiled and said, "Brad, you know what? Every time we go head to head for one of these kids out there, we win." I'm like, "What do you mean you win?" She goes, "Well, listen to this, Brad. We have break rooms with free food. We have air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter." And I'm like, "Hey, we've got that. It's just reversed. You know, we sleep in the winter and heat in the summer." And we just laughed about it. But honestly, she's right. We still live in an industry that is outside work. We deal with the elements. And, you know, do I want to be a framer or a mechanic? They offer benefits. How many people in our industry do not offer the basic 401k, health, dental, life insurance, vacation time, holiday pay? I don't know how it is in Arizona, but around Utah, a few years ago, I taught a lot of continuing ed, and I asked that in every class. 90% of the participants in the class either did not receive those benefits or, as owners, did not offer those benefits to their team members. And Magleby always has. And Paul Magleby's done that for 25, 30 years as we approach our 50th year in business this year. But the industry as a whole doesn't. And so how do we expect to bring in the best? We set ourselves up to bring in the average, you know, and then we have our wonderful politicians in Congress who have decided in the House of Representatives that they should cut all the Job Corps funding in the entire country, putting 70,000 young people that need a leg up out on the street again and not training for these types of jobs. And I just visited Job Corps in Utah, in Clearfield, Utah. We have the largest Job Corps center in the country. And we, HBI, Home Builders Institute, has 70 students up there right now in four different programs. And I just was thrilled that we have people learning to be electricians and learning to be HVAC techs and learning to be building maintenance people. And the program's got some efficiency issues. Let's fix the efficiency. Let's not throw 70 kids, you know, a year out of the program. So there's a lot of things that are driving this challenge with labor. And there's a lot of good programs around the country, and none of them are even making a dent. We still need 250,000-300,000 workers.
I'm glad you brought that up. I think that Toyota example is pretty interesting because many of us have seen it's kind of multi-layered, the challenges, right? I mean, in high school, there's not trade school anymore. So it's not like kids have an understanding going to the trades. Everyone's driven to, you have to go to college, right? Without understanding the opportunities there. But to your point, it's hard labor. I remember, I think one of the, call it empathy, you know, sympathy, whatever you want to say, as a general contractor, I worked as a sub. You know, I grew up as an electrician. My dad was an electrician. My uncles were. And so I remember what it was like showing up to the job site with tools, whether it was hot outside, cold in the winter, as you mentioned. And, you know, there's days you may be tired, you may be having a bad day, and you're out. You have to do physical labor that's pretty strenuous. And, you know, and there's a motivation side there, and it's really tough. You know, it's kind of limiting. And I think your unique perspective, Brad, is that at Magleby, you know, a lot of us general contractors are subcontracting all of our trade partners, and you guys are actually self-performing some of that work. And so do you see an avenue? You know, I know that Instagram and social media and the podcast and so many things we're doing is creating an understanding to the general public as much as we can. A lot of us are speaking, you know, NHB is involved. We're trying to meet with young kids and take them around to show them the opportunities in construction. But, you know, what advantages, I mean, what can we do specifically what you're doing at Magleby to like get people excited about the trades to come in and then figure out how you're going to train them and give benefits and all the things you mentioned that Paul's doing?
I think the challenge is we need to get to the parents. Parents are the influencers, right? And anything we do, anything we try and sell, or we have to find influencers to support us. And we're getting with the kids. We're going out in the high schools. We're, you know, HBI, Home Builders Institute, has training programs all around the country and Job Corps centers on military bases in high schools. I'll be participating in a high school program for Future Builders of America, which is a Florida program, in just a couple months. And we're trying to take that nationwide. So that would like compete with FBLA or, you know, Homemakers of America or whatever. But we need to get to the parents. The parents are the influencers, and we need to push the idea that our industry has the greatest ease of entry of any industry I'm aware of. You can own your own company. Some states don't even require a license. If you have the energy and the risk tolerance to start your own business, you can go from swinging a hammer to owning your own business in a very short period of time. And it really goes back to, you can do that if you're a craftsman, if you really love the industry and it's more than just a paycheck. And we see that all the time. My electrician started, with his dad, but he now runs his own electrical company. My best friend's son went through the apprenticeship program, owns his own electrical company, now has started his own home building company. I mean, you know, no education other than the electrical apprenticeship program. So there's a huge ease of entry. They can make good money. And right now, I mean, we're paying laborers right off the street $20 an hour. That's a little over $40,000 a year to come sweep a house. And so the wages have definitely gone up. And that's important because we need to help people make enough money to survive in their lives. And then I think the other thing we could do as an industry is better onboarding, more training rather than just throwing them to the wolves. And we struggle with that in our own trade group. We need people so bad and everybody's so busy. It's like, here, grab this hammer and we'll teach as we go. And maybe we need to spend a little more time up front helping them be ready. I know in our Dominican program, we require our customers to spend a full 2 weeks paying the new team members to learn U.S. construction. And that's because they know Dominican construction, they don't know U.S. construction. And so it's not optional, right? The customers have to pay them to do 2 weeks worth of study. And it really helps give them a leg up. And these are professionals, these are not craftsmen, but it's kind of the same concept. We need to be a little more thoughtful about that and you know, understand there's a great framing company out of New Jersey that we do work for in the Dominican Republic. And they spent several weeks in training, what I like to call discovery, human discovery, to help their team member before they threw him to the wolves and put him into the production line. And so that dedication, and I'll say another thing about it, it's Nomad Framing back in New Jersey, but they called and said, we want to give our team member more benefits than you give your Dominican team members. Can we do that? We want to treat them exactly like we treat our team members here in New Jersey. And I'm like, great. And so they're really looking out for their people. And I think that's an area that we in our industry could focus a little more on. I'll never forget in my production days, and I won't tell you who it is or what company, but the owner looked at me one day. We were having trouble with a couple of team members. And he said, Brad, they're just cogs in a machine. Cog breaks, you just replace it, throw it out and get a new one. And that's kind of our attitude sometimes. And that's not a great attitude. These are people, these are families, these are lives, and they're building everything we ask them to build. So I think we need to ramp up our side to help them ramp up their side.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Brad, because as you think about it, there's definitely a mentality of employers out there that think, hey, it's just find and replace, right? And it's a lot more challenging than that. And any company that really dives into the organizational side will see that there's a cost to replace, right? There's onboarding and interviewing, and there's so much downtime, right? That you're not actually performing the skill that you're being paid to do. When you look at the training aspect, it's interesting because so much demotivation of employees and personnel is because they don't know what to do. They're not trained. They're not, haven't been onboarded properly. Whereas, as you've mentioned here, just in this, you know, what you shared is that by having a good training system, they're more likely to retain, they're more likely to come on, they're more likely to be successful and actually add to the company environment and to the product that you're putting out there.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, we have, at Magleby, we've promoted a couple people off the framing crews or the finish crews into IT, into leadership. And there, those opportunities are there. You just got to provide them some knowledge base and some opportunities to learn and grow. I know, my first international builder show was right after I joined Woodside Homes, like in my first year, and I've been going ever since. And there's hundreds of educational platforms there, you know, thousands of feet of displays. A lot of what I learned from that, those experiences, because the companies, all the companies I've worked for have allowed me to go and paid for me to go. And so that's really important. I think one of the other things that's a challenge in our industry, quite honestly, is in a world of everybody has a personal coach, everybody has a counselor they go to, seems like. We in our industry, maybe we're mavericks or whatever, we just think we can all go do it on our own. And a lot of us elevate to the Peter principle, right? We become owners of companies, but we don't know how to lead. And we miss the very basics of leadership. And I know in my early days when I was president of a production company, I was a horrible leader. I mean, I look back at it now and I just shake my head. Did we make lots of money? Yep, we made a lot of money. But I was not a good leader. And really, that's where a lot of it is. And I mean, there's a guy named Charles Hardy from the 60s. He says, you know, we've been talking about leadership for thousands of years and we still don't get it right. And I think he's right. You know, we just struggle. There's a new book on the shelf every day, and half of them are written by people who've never really had to lead. And so, again, I think we struggle with that as an industry, and I wish we could find a way to really ramp that up and really help, because most, like I said, the best people in the world, but if you don't know how to be a leader, even if you're the best person in the world, you're still going to struggle in your company.
So walk us through, Brad. You know, you mentioned the Peter principle there. Like, break that down. You know, what that is for those that may not be familiar. And then also, you know, you mentioned that, hey, I'm a much better leader today than I was years ago. What are some of the maybe key principles or things that you've implemented that have changed?
So the Peter principle basically is a concept of promoting out a person out of their skill set. And we each have a capacity equation. You know, we have certain capacity and we have a stretch capacity equation. We can stretch, but we can't always stretch beyond what we can stretch. And sometimes we, either as leaders in our own company, promote people because they're there and we promote them into a position where they do not have the skill set or they do not have the stretch capacity to make it work. And a lot of times in our industry, with the ease of entry, we just promote ourselves into a position where we're way beyond our skill set and we don't think we can hire experts. I mean, it's been said a million times, the best leaders are people who surround themselves with experts that, you know, have skills they don't have. Ezra Nilsson at Woodside Homes, he loved to design plans and help design communities. He had a huge company. When I left him, they were building 2,500 homes a year. They became the largest privately held builder in the country at one point. And he delegated, or like I like to say, entrusted everyone with everything else in his company while he focused on what he liked doing and what he was good at. And so we need to do that. My leadership, a lot of experience has how I've changed. I mean, a lot of hard knocks, you know, the school of hard knocks, but also went back to school and got some formal education. I didn't get my bachelor's till I was 49, my master's at 51. And if I quit arguing with my professors, someday I'll have a doctorate in leadership, business development, or business. But the bottom line is learning and focusing on that, going to seminars, you know, getting mentors. If you get a life coach, get somebody who knows whose life's better off than yours, because a lot of the life coaches I've run into have more problems than you or I have. And so, but there are people out there that will help. You know, I'd have a little consulting thing on the side and I don't do it much because I'm way too busy, but I love just hanging out with builders and, you know, being that set of eyes outside the forest that can say, hey, have you thought about this or that? And so that's a powerful way to engage. And, you know, the reason I'm talking to you today is there's a gentleman Kalen that loves your podcast, and I've been meeting with him, and he's a sponge. They're loggers out of Canada, came down to Utah and started a home building business. And, but they are such a sponge. And in a year, they have just really been able to fine tune things and take their enthusiasm and put it in the right energy slots. And so there's a lot we can do. There's a lot of resources out there. We just need to engage them. And sometimes we're just, to be honest with you, we're too busy. I find this all the time. We're so busy doing the day-to-day work, we don't have time to do the fine-tuning. And a lot of things fall through the cracks.
So how have you seen, you know, in addition to leadership, and you mentioned the fine-tuning, evaluate your business, right? And not letting things, you know, fall through those cracks. But when you think about company culture, you've been involved in so many businesses, you're consulting so many businesses. What are some of the metrics? What are some of the examples that have created excellent company culture? I mean, what's different about those companies that you've seen from afar that are really strong in that category?
Well, I mean, cultures develop whether you are leading the culture or whether you're just ignoring it. There's always a culture. And the best cultures I've found are cultures that treat their people well. And I'm not talking about overcompensating them, talking about just generally treating them well, and creating an environment where your people can go do what they do best. And that's why I like the word entrustment rather than delegate, because really you need to find a spot where you can trust your team to do their jobs and not worry about necessarily how they get it across the finish line, but worry more about the finish line. And this has been a concept that's really hard for me. In my early days, I micromanaged everything. I had to be done Brad's way. And I finally gotten to the point where I set out a finish line and say, let me know how you're going to get there, but let's, you know, go for it. And you have to be willing to suffer some risk or have some risk in that. But what I find is most of the time people get it across the finish line their own way, and it may not be pretty, but they get it done. And they learn along the way, and next time they'll do it better. And I think we struggle in our industry a little bit with that and with our culture, because we feel we're workers, right? We're the people that are in the trench. We're doing the work, and we tend to want to make sure everybody does it exactly the same way. And we don't need to do that. Paul Magleby, when he created Magleby Construction, just by the little things he did, created an amazing culture. And I mean, Todd Christensen has been with Magleby for 45 years, and he still tells the story of they're out framing. So Magleby started as a framing crew, and they're out framing a house. And Todd mentioned he needed to go later in the day and buy a new fridge, and how he couldn't afford it and was going to have to find financing for it. And Paul left the job site. Todd didn't know where he went, but when Todd got home, there was a brand new fridge sitting in Todd's driveway. Todd, 45 years later, still tells that story. We had a team member who was trying to get his citizenship and couldn't. He was a framer, couldn't afford it. Our superintendent called and said, "Hey, Brad, Marco wants to get his citizenship. He's eligible, but he can't afford the fees. Is there any way we can help him out?" And about 8 months later, I was sitting in a swearing-in ceremony with Marco and his family, and he became a U.S. citizen. And you know what? He still talks about that. So it's those little things we do, keeping our ear to the ground. That's more important, I think, in the cultural side than anything. Magleby has an internal slogan, professionals dedicated to building excellence. So we've actually trademarked, and that's hanging on our wall, but we don't really put that out there for the public. It's more about who we are inside and creating that culture. But I really think just doing the little things, paying attention, is as important for a culture as anything. Everybody's going to have their own slogans and stuff, but taking care of your people, being reasonable. I mean, you don't have to be taken advantage of to be nice to people or help them out. And they are really the ones who do the work. When you think about it, you and I probably sit in an office more than we are out on the job sites, and we go to meetings and things like that, but it's the guys and gals out in the field that are carrying the load. They're the ones that make us all the money. We stand on their shoulders. And so treating them well, I think, is the number one cultural thing that we need to do.
It's such great perspective. When, you know, the examples you gave about purchasing the refrigerator and, you know, the citizenship, and, you know, I think there's a lot of applications both internally and externally, and the fact that, you know, if you're paying attention to the customer, if you're paying attention to your employees, you're to the ground, you're going to pick up on those things, right? That you can recall and use and help and catch and whatever it may be that, that separate you from everybody else. And there's a couple of points too that I've never contextualized or thought about as it regards company culture. And I wrote these down because you said, hey, you know, early on you said, Brad, if people are overcompensated for their role, right? That's one thing. You know, you use the word entrustment, right? And trusting them, you know, and then also you mentioned promote over their skill set, which you said early on. And I thought that's interesting because as you look back, you know, all of us have our skill set and capability and knowledge and understanding of our, you know, and if they're promoted too fast or to a leadership role or to something that they're not, for lack of a better word, qualified for, puts them in a position where now they're exposed and people become frustrated. And so things can start to separate at the seams and break apart.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers, because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf and Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we've been talking a lot at Magleby. Magleby's a really big business. We have 350 employees. We have businesses in three foreign countries. We talk a lot about the fact that excellence becomes average really, really fast if you're overloaded. And so even if you have the capacity or skill set for a job, if you're overloading someone, let's just say, for example, you take your remodel vice president and you promote him to company president, but you keep him on the remodel team too. So now he's got remodel, but he's also running your company. Is that even reasonable? And that happens all the time. And, you know, it's kind of happening to me right now. And I'm kind of trying to figure out how to do it because I just got asked to step into our Sun Valley group and help. And it's not like I have, you know, extra time every day. And so we do that because maybe we're in a point where we are at the end of our rope. We don't know what to do. So we'll go to this person because they've done a good job in remodel and make them president of the company too. But we don't consider the fact that we just overloaded them to the point where their excellence performance of the past is going to become the average of the future. And so we've got to be careful with that. I'm a big planner, big strategic planner. I like to plan way ahead, and maybe we need to do that. Maybe we need to think down the road. Oh, we're growing and we need somebody to take over this so we can, but let's backfill and get somebody to take over remodel. And hey, we just have to do a better job. And that's really all about leadership. Leadership really is different than managing. Leadership is about vision and about seeing the big picture and planning and preparing for things, where management is more the nuts and bolts. How do we get this across the finish line every day? And I think we're pretty good managers. We struggle on the leadership side.
So how has that looked? I mean, you mentioned the Magleby's working in multiple countries. I mean, you've referenced there in multiple states. Organizationally, you know, how has Magleby grown to do that? And I'm sure you've been a big part of that as well, Brad, to be in different areas. And there has to be a level of understanding, company culture, as you mentioned, training, you know, systemization, protocol. I mean, all these different things to work in these different environments that are completely unique to each other.
Yeah, and unique environments require unique approaches too. So we do have a pretty good corporate group that works. Right before this meeting, I was on our corporate weekly huddle with all the presidents and vice presidents of the different groups. And so we strive to address the local conditions while providing corporate structure. And the corporate structure is focused on training, accounting, you know, it's global accounting, training people, systemization, forms, legal, those types of things are more corporate level. And then, you know, how we build the houses really is going to be done by the team in that area. And finding good people. We've been very, very fortunate to find some really good people who have stepped up and been able to lead our group. Sorry, I thought I had all that turned off, but so that's really the important part. Again, you've got to, like, we have a plant in Mexico that does commercial cabinetry, and we can't be there every day. We have to entrust the managers to lead that group. And I lead a group down in the Dominican Republic, and I'm there 2 weeks a month. I'm not there every day, and I have to be able to trust the team that they can take care of that and do everything they need to do. And that was my assistant, like, calling me and then sending me 6 WhatsApps. So, but, you know, you can get it done. And it's surprising when you trust people, the right people, when you trust them, how well they can do. And I will tell you that you still have to be in the trench. I mean, when I was president of Woodside Homes, Utah, I would spend every afternoon. Mondays were in the office, but every other day of the week, I was out in the field every afternoon. I'd spend the morning in the office. You can delegate that crap in the office. Being out in the field, talking to the guys building the houses, talking to the salespeople in the model homes was by far more important. It's taken me a long time to learn and look back at the good things I did as a leader. And that was one of the good things, just being out and listening. Right now we have 50 team members in Dominican Republic. And when I'm in town or even when I'm not in town, they have 100% priority. My assistant knows she can change anything on my schedule to accommodate a team member that wants to talk to me. And it goes a long ways. And, as leaders, we have to be prepared to deal with everything because our team members do not live in our companies. Our companies are a small part of their lives. And probably one of the more controlled parts of their lives. And so we have to deal with everything that's going on in their lives and be ready to support them and everything. And, you know, that can be medical, it can be family problems, it can be friend problems, you know, who knows? I mean, we all live in that world and we come to work and we can't turn off that external world. So we have to be ready as leaders to step in and help with everything.
Walk us through when you mentioned, I mean, you're there 2 weeks a month. I know when we're coordinating schedule, you're there in the Dominican Republic. Walk us through that venture, what it entails. I mean, you have a lot of employees down there, kind of specialty purpose.
Yeah. So again, most of what we're doing at Magleby all over the place are accidental opportunities. We're in Sun Valley because the holding said it, well, one of our Finnish carpenters was working on their hotel in Salt Lake and stayed late, and Mrs. Holding saw him and she called and said, "Will you go to Idaho and build stuff for us?" So really because of one Finnish carpenter that was going the extra mile, we have a $20 million a year company in Sun Valley, Idaho. So the Dominican Republic is very similar. Brigham Young University's construction management program has a relationship with a university in the Dominican Republic called INTEC. They convinced them to come up and compete in the student competitions at IBS and got slaughtered, 45th out of 45th. And Chad Magleby sits on the BYU advisory board and reached out and said, can you go help them? And so we went down there and just found a bunch of really professional kids, I call them. They're all college graduates. But and we started beta testing some at Magleby and with some other builder friends around the country and found that they are very, very capable. And they're available and they stay, they don't leave. A lot of times we hire estimators out of college and they'll work for us for a year and then they go chase the bigger money in the commercial industry. And right now Magleby has 5 estimators in the Dominican Republic in addition to our US-based team. And they haven't left. They've been there, most of them are entering their third year and our chief estimator loves it. And we have about 26 team members that draw trusses and floor trusses, wall sections, not wall trusses, but for 84 Lumber, we have EWP designers, we have commercial estimators, we have accountants, we have personal assistants, we have social media managers. Pretty much all of our customers are friends that have just said, hey, what are you doing down there? Oh, can you do this for me? And we go find somebody to do it. And we've grown in, we moved in our office 2 years ago in January, and we've grown from 5 people when we moved in the office to now we're at 50. And
wow.
And they all work remotely. So one of the advantages of the pandemic, we learned we can work remote. So they all work remotely and they work directly for the customer. That's one of the things that I think we're different than most offshore companies. Is they're your team members. We don't play middleman. I couldn't tell you what the 84 Lumber truss designers do. I just know that they sit at a computer and design trusses, and one plant wanted a phone. So one group's got a phone that they can call their plant on. And we're actually looking right now. I think we've got about 12 new team members in the queue that should be hired in the next week or so. And so we'll be up to about 62 and, great opportunity. We pay them well. We do not take advantage of them. We pay them well. We train them. And our customers, again, most of them being friends of mine, they all see the vision and they treat their team members very well. But their team members are providing services they can't find in the U.S. and at an affordable price. And so it's a win-win. We talk about needing 300,000 workers in the construction industry, and we focus on the skill-based labor, the craftsmen, but we have a huge need on the professional side too. We just can't keep people there, especially in the custom world. And so we found an outlet where we can just basically connect people, and then we just provide the back office and the training and the government regulations and stuff like that. So again, total accident. Never thought I'd be in the Dominican Republic. Not a bad place to work. I'm just telling you. It's nice. but we've got some great customers and some great team members down there. So it's exciting. I love it. It's my favorite place. Not because it's a Caribbean island, but when you're huddled up with 50 young people that are just going crazy and getting stuff across the finish lines and happy about it and love their jobs. And I pulled in the other day and a gentleman that's worked for us, he's in his third year, he's been riding public transportation for over 3 hours a day back and forth. And I pulled in the parking lot and he was getting out of a brand new car and had a huge smile on his face. And the fact that we probably facilitated that makes my heart feel good.
That's amazing. And, I actually watched a video on that and it's pretty impressive what you're doing. And, and to think about the complexity of, truss calcs, and all of us understand anyone that's done modern architecture and you're trying to fail ductwork and how that's going to flow through the trusses. I mean, there's a huge need for that and estimating. I mean, most of the companies that I network with, commercial residential estimating is one of their biggest challenges in any company. It's one of the hardest positions to fill and retain and have someone skilled. So if someone, Brad, is similar to myself or someone listening that has a company that's looking at filling the need, whether it be estimating or accounting, or you mentioned, coordinating trusses with their company, from takeoffs, is it open where they could contact you and this company, and work through
that? Yeah, I do have an exclusive with 84 Lumber on truss design only, because there's some things they do that they don't necessarily want the competition to know, but all the other positions are open. It is a full-time obligation. We don't have any part-time. You got to have enough work to keep somebody busy full-time, but we, and I didn't mention, we do visualization. We have a small team down there. That's our only real product that we actually manage, the visualization. But again, that's just a friend of mine who's a designer who needed some visualization. And so we hired one, and now we're up to four. And so we're just trying to help people. So yeah, if we can help it, I will tell everybody right now, I do require that you come down to the DR two times a year. That's right in our contract. You got to be there. You got to be in person. Maybe that's Brad, the old guy, but there's so much difference. Scott Remick from 84 Lumber is down there four or five times a year, and several of the 84 Lumber team members from Pennsylvania are down there several times a year. And we see the huge difference it makes to have them be there and sitting side by side. Our Magleby chief estimator's down there four times a year. And so we accommodate that. We've got a condo you stay in. We pick you up at the airport. We try and make it really easy. And again, we're just a bunch of dumb construction guys. We're not like a people company. We're learning as we're going, but we're having a lot of fun doing it and getting some work done. So it's exciting.
Well, you mentioned that, all this vast experience you've had and all these ancillary companies. I mean, there's a lot of management there. I mean, there's a lot that you're coordinating, a lot behind the scenes. I mean, mine's kind of blown listening to the details there. And what you have to manage, Brad, you mentioned your involvement with the NHB and that role could be growing. In your opinion, Utah has a really strong NHB, right? And Arizona, at least my experience has been, not as strong. You have these markets, you have a phenomenal Pray to Homes, good involvement locally. You mentioned, from Job Corp, right? You guys have one of the biggest ones in Utah. Why has NHB struggled maybe in certain areas of the country? Kind of what's their focus? How is that going to be changing in the years to come?
So NHB is a federation of local associations, and really they provide resources for the local associations, but they're not running the locals. And recently, I serve on a committee called Association Planning, and we rolled out some really great things. I'm not sure the membership knows yet, but NHB is starting to do a lot of things for free that they were charging for in the past, which is exciting as they can help locals. But like Arizona, you don't have a state association. You have a couple of locals. I think you have three locals. Having a state association helps bring everybody together. There are resources at the national level that can help the local associations. But really, NHB is a facilitator. NHB's greatest contribution to our industry is the government affairs, what we do on the Hill. We have a desire to build affordable homes and build for our nation, but there are a lot of people out there who have different opinions than we have. And so we've got to be at the table all the time, and we have to fight the battles all the time. And so that's a big, big part of what NHB does. In addition to the International Builders Show, which is coming up in a few weeks, which is an amazing event. That will be a really good show this year. It's going to be busy. Last year we had people say it was too busy. It's going to be busy. It's going to be busy this year. And we're grateful to the folks in Las Vegas who added a whole new convention wing so we can spread out a little bit. But yeah, it's going to be a great show. So NHB works really, really hard, but it really, to be successful, it's about the local level. And I'll just tell you, just like anything, if you get a great executive officer to run your association, so the volunteers can be volunteers and run their businesses and help out when they can. That, to me, that's where the difference is. My local association, Utah Valley Home Builders, is really lucky. We've got Steve Caldwell, who's an amazing executive officer, and someday he's going to die in that position. I think he's like 90. No, he's not 90. He's in his late 70s. He's still going strong. But I think it's really about the local leadership. National can be a support, but they're not going to run your day to day.
Yeah. Just like everything. I mean, you're going to get as much out of it too, as you put into it, which is part of it. Career side from you. I mean, your passion for the industry, we kind of started there, Brad, but you've had vast experience, from Woodside to Cottage to now Magleby, You know, walk us through those different chapters. What changed, you know, that kind of led you to those next opportunities?
Well, you know, I, as a young man, I got my real estate license really early, and my dad's was a broker. We were out selling, and Woodside Homes was our competitor, and they had a beautiful decorated model, and we had a cardboard table in our model, Woodside guy got reassigned, and so they hired my dad's real estate company, and I ended up being at Woodside, and 17 years, well, not 17 years later, but about 14 years later, I was the president of the company. A lot of learning. Thanks to Ezra Nilsson, who mentored me through all that. You don't go from young salesman out on the model home to president of the company without a lot of help. Left Woodside, went and bought with my brother our dad's company, Cottage Homes, and we didn't make it through the Great Recession. We didn't bankrupt, but there just was no work, so we finished the homes we had and paid off our lines and closed it down and went other directions. And so I ended up at Magleby, and my brother was at Magleby for a while, and then went out on his own and started his own construction company again. And so, you know, just a lot of opportunities. I'm at National. I will resign from the board this year after 26 years. Stephanie Daly, a young member of our industry, will take my place. And I'm way excited about having a female board member and someone that's from a younger generation than most of the old guys and gals at the board level.
And Stephanie, real quick, if I interrupt you, she did the house that she built right there in Utah?
She was very involved in the house that she built. She was one of the general contractors, yes, mm-hmm. And does a lot on social media. Just started a new thing called the job site codes, which is using QR codes to map the data on our jobs. And she's a go-getter. I mean, she goes 100 miles an hour. I think I'm busy, and I look at her and I just get seasick. So but I'm excited that she's stepping up. She's actually president of our local association this year. And there's a lot of opportunities for young people who want to step up and be dedicated. And I'll tell you, 26 years of volunteerism at NHB, and I, you know, I'll still stay on the leadership council, but I don't regret one minute. And I put a lot of effort in that, but it has given me back more than I have contributed. What I've been able to learn, the relationships I have, it's paid me back tenfold.
That's amazing. And Stephanie, actually, she was a former guest on the podcast, and I know Stephanie pretty well, but pretty amazing. Well, Brad, you've been so gracious with your time. I know how busy you are. And so before we have you close this, what do you do for fun?
I like to camp and golf. I'm horrible at golf. I don't keep score. That's how I stay sane. But I do golf a lot and camp, and I love to travel. So I travel for work all the time. And when I'm not traveling for work, I'm in that metal tube flying across your skies going on vacation. So that's the one advantage of traveling a lot for business, is you get lots of points. So you get to go around the world and see fun things and cool things. So,
well, Brad, you've been amazing. So for those listening, where can they find you?
You can just find me. I don't know. I'm not good at that stuff. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, Brad Simons. Utah Valley Home Builders. I think there's a directory there. You could find my name there. That's the best thing. So I don't know what else.
Well, that makes it easy, Brad. So thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate having you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. And hopefully we talked about something your listeners want to hear. Appreciate what you do in the industry and what you, the word, good word you try and spread.
If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes. Please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.